Hokie Pod on the Virginia Tech IMG Sports Network is brought to you by Virginia Farm Bureau Insurance. Get an online auto quote or connect with your local agent at vfbinsurance.com today. Here we go.
Touchdown, Virginia Tech Hokies!
How about the Hokie Nation?
Strowman all the way to the house!
Hard, smart, tough. Holy cow, is that this team or what?
It is picked up by Motua Puaka. Nothing but clean mountain air in front of him.
Welcome to Hokie Pod. I'm Andrew Allegretta.
And I'm Mike Burnham.
And I'm John Lazor.
Coming up on today's show, we'll talk with receiver C.J. Carroll. He joins Hokie Pod. We'll recap Clemson, and we'll get to know the Carroll family a little bit. Don't forget, as always, rate and subscribe the podcast. Plus, listen to all of our programming throughout the course of the week. Our game broadcast at Boston College begins at 5:30 with the Kubota kickoff show. From Boston, looks like it'll be a little bit cloudy, temperatures in the low 70s for those of you coming to the game. And as always, Virginia Tech Sports Today airs across the Commonwealth on Sunday mornings, plus online, hokiesports.com. That's the programming stuff. Now let's talk about the game that was, guys. We'll talk about the Clemson game first before we get into Boston College. First off, the fun stuff. Great atmosphere in Blacksburg. Fantastic day right up until Clemson started to play really well. What will you guys remember about the atmosphere?
Well, I'm still doing laundry. Had a house full of people. Yeah. It was crazy. What a crazy weekend. But so much fun. I mean, having game day here was outstanding. Just watching the pomp and circumstance around that and all the people that were out there. I think the Hokie Nation showed up great. The signs were fantastic. Unbelievable atmosphere. That part was great. The skydivers coming in, that was fantastic. The pregame ritual, all that stuff was great. So we'll remember that. Got to see some old friends, some old teammates. My quarterback was here. Don Strock came into the game, and we had dinner at the farmhouse one night and reminisced. And one of his teammates, our other teammate, was there as well. And then I saw some in the pregame, postgame. Didn't see too many then because obviously it was pretty late. But that was an incredible atmosphere and one of the best I've seen since that Miami game in probably 03. It was as loud as it's ever been. So, yeah, that was awesome.
Well, I got to use the social media lingo and give an HT a hat tip to Virginia Tech marketing because a lot of people in that department, not just at Virginia Tech, but anywhere, you only notice them when things go awry. And I thought that they had the weekend on lockdown from actually before the weekend. And the pregame pageantry was special. To coordinate skydivers and how long it's going to take them to fall to the earth and just sync that up with the entrance and Sandman, it was unbelievable. But the biggest takeaway for me wasn't any individual event. It's just how much fun it is to be around and be involved in a program at that level. And we got that taste. Again, Mike obviously knows what that's like for many, many years. And we've been on the fringes, right, Andrew, since you've been here, and even less so since I've been here. It's incredibly exhilarating to work around a program like that. And it just increases your desire to get back there, not only for football, but in our case for basketball as well. So I woke up a little bit upset, obviously, on Sunday morning, not because the team lost, just because you just have that disappointing feeling like you didn't get an outstanding game to call in our case. But on Monday, I woke up and said, man, you know, that was fun. How are we going to get back there? What can we do to get back there? And obviously, it's a very minimal part that we play, but at the same time, invigorated towards what it was. I thought Tech displayed fantastically, did a phenomenal job across the board, and yeah.
I'll echo what you guys had to say. First off, great to see so many people back in town. I got to see our old friend Colin Carroll, the former long snapper here at Virginia Tech, talk with him a little bit. Our good friend Andrew Rash was back in town, one of our baseball players. I got to hang out with him. Awesome to see so many people. So first off, it's great to know what, as always, football can do to bring people back in town and kind of recreate the chemistry of Hokie Nation past and family and all that sort of stuff. That's fantastic, first off.
How about having those eight or nine retired people back, their jerseys back? Yeah. That was unbelievably special. Seeing Corey Moore out there and obviously Coach Beamer, Bruce Smith, and Carol Dale. And the Loria family was represented by the son there. I mean, that was Jim Pine. I haven't seen him in a long time. I wish I could have been down there to spend a little time with those guys because that was pretty awesome to see all those people back in one time, one space. That was pretty neat. And just all the recruits that were there, I mean, golly, it's nice to be relevant again and have a big game day atmosphere like it was. And, yeah, so when you play those top teams like that, that's pretty cool, and you just got to get yourself – it kind of tells you where you need to get to that next level. Hokies have been there in the past, and they know what it takes to get there now.
I'll tell you, old Grove looks like he could still grate the road a little bit.
Dude, he could play now. He was a hoss. He was a dude.
I'll tell you this, too, from a recruiting standpoint, as I understand it, in the past, when you had recruits back on campus, they couldn't directly interact with your former players, but now they have that opportunity. They've made some adjustments with the rules, as I understand it. I don't want to totally mischaracterize it, but you've got all of those players back. You've got the recruiting people coming in. Look, didn't win the game, but from a recruiting standpoint, it is still going to be huge.
Yeah, and Justin Fuente answered that directly on Tech Talk Live, which you can listen to on the same channel, and he said, look, by the time we'd kicked off the game, we already won. I mean, when you put on a show like that and the message that you have to send out, and that was Tech at a level that I hadn't seen it in terms of pageantry and all those things, with the rule tweaks that you're talking about and the engagement that you had with the people that were here, yeah, you already won. And like I said on the Hokie Pod last week, if you lose the game, which you did, your message is, look at all of this. We need you to come here so we can elevate to that level. And maybe you didn't directly deliver that message in the aftermath of the game, probably not, but that's what you'll do when you get back on social media and you have contact with these kids again. And it resonated, I guarantee you, because it resonated with some people that I know that sometimes trend towards pessimism. So when you look at optimistic and bright-eyed 16- to 18-year-old kids, they got the point. This is a place that you can win, and if you do, you're going to be supported like that.
And it wasn't just football. I mean, it was every sport.
Absolutely.
I think they had like 30 players here, Kenny Brooks. I mean, you go through every sport, had recruits here, and somebody told me it might have been up to 800 tickets that they used for recruits and their families just for this weekend. Everybody bought in and wanted to get a piece of the action because they knew how important it was and how great the atmosphere was.
Yeah, no doubt. I know women's basketball had some star recruits on campus, and hopefully that helps as well. Some of the good things on the field, I know the defense wasn't perfect, but against a Clemson team like that, what was it, 61, 62 yards after the half? The defense, again, not perfect, but played a pretty darn good game.
I think they played better than they did in the ACC championship game last year. Certainly, I don't think Clemson's offense is to that level where they were. Maybe they'll get there. But, yeah, I thought they played pretty well. You know, Bud Foster would say you can't have that level of mistake in terms of the Feaster 60-yard touchdown reception. And he's right. You have to make them move the football and execute down the field. And outside of that, for the most part, they did. You know, you weren't going to shut out that team. You weren't expecting to shut out that team. Maybe they were, but I didn't think that was a tangible goal for this team. We said, bottle up the running game. They did that with the running backs. They lost Kelly Bryant, not necessarily because they weren't in their places, but because he's just an athletic guy capable of breaking your ankles and making you miss. But yeah, you were in the game from a defensive perspective, and that's honestly all that you can ask.
Yeah, I mean, the big plays were huge. Obviously, the turnovers were huge. So the 60-yard touchdown was big, obviously, when you think about it, they got 14 points off turnovers. Okay, the pick six wasn't Josh Jackson's fault. I mean, that's obviously a big thing. So when you add in that and a 60-yard touchdown pass on a broken coverage that the dude never got touched, I mean, there's 21 points, right? And you lose by 14. So, you know, it's not too hard to figure out. The number one thing we talked about all last week before this was ball security. He didn't do it. And so you look at the turnovers, they just absolutely kill you. So the defense didn't play bad, much better in the second half. Obviously, they gave up a few big plays, not scoring plays like that 60-yarder, but probably a few too many for Bud Foster. But again, the adjustments at halftime, the defense played much better, good enough to win against a really good team. But obviously, you got to do more offensively, and you can't make mistakes that get you in trouble.
And we've been keeping an eye on the second level of the defensive line and some of the advancement on offense for the younger guys. I thought that was the best that the defensive tackles had played, and they had to because they rarely came off the field. And Tim Settle and Ricky Walker, I thought they got a pretty good push through the middle against that offensive line from Clemson that maybe doesn't rank up there with their defensive line, but certainly a very capable group. And physically, they were able to stay in there. And as Mike pointed out, they played better in the second half, which was our concern of getting worn down by TNT and Kelly Bryant and all of those things. So I think you came out of the game from a defensive perspective down Divine Diablo from 2 weeks ago, but feeling pretty good about where you are heading to Boston College.
And you keep that play count down. Mm-hmm. That makes a big difference.
No doubt. And there was one guy I wanted to single out before we start to talk about the struggles that this team had, the things that need to be fixed. And he's not the only one that's playing well. I don't want to state that. But I like the way Greg Stroman's playing big time right now. Not just on the field but on the bench. I talked about this on the broadcast. First off, the punt return he had was fantastic. But he's growing, at least it seems to me, on the bench as a leader that can help manage the defense. Because there's some guys on that sideline, Mook Reynolds, to be honest, who runs hot. There's guys that run a little bit cool like Adonis Alexander. And Greg Strowman has turned into this guy that kind of brings them together. Terrell Edmonds does a nice job of that as well. But I love what I'm seeing out of Greg Strowman, a senior really embracing that role as an upperclassman this year.
And I think that comes with his level of confidence, because he's not going to sit here and tell you that he's the best corner on this team. But to this point, I think he's played as the best corner on this team. Adonis Alexander missing a couple of games. And you don't notice Strowman a ton on the defensive side because they're not throwing at him nearly as much as they're throwing at the other side. And I know that you're not getting consistent looks in terms of matchups and things like that, Mike. But in my opinion, Strowman has been maybe not your most physically gifted corner, but he's been the most consistent.
Yeah, and he's a great kid, number one. And he's shown you the ability that he's an unbelievable athlete, that he can play both sides of the ball and be an incredible punt returner. I mean, I don't think people have any idea how hard that is to look up in that dark sky, right, and catch that punt on the run like he did and have no fear, to have the kahunas to do that. I mean, come on, that is difficult.
Particularly, then, Mike, when you got hurt on a punt return last year.
Yeah, against Duke, I guess it was, right? Yeah, I mean, that is so difficult, and it takes guts to do that. And to catch that thing full speed ahead and go down there and almost score off of it, pretty amazing. But he is a terrific kid, great player, kind of an unsung hero maybe. And you just got to love what he's all about and how good a job he's done and how consistent he's been.
All right, so let's talk about some of the things that concerned us after this game, the struggles that Virginia Tech had, because there clearly were some. First off, I don't know how else to say it. Clemson is really darn good, and at spots on that field, they're just better than Virginia Tech. Quite honestly, they're the number two team in the country for a reason. So where do you guys see the talent difference the most between Clemson on Saturday and Virginia Tech on Saturday?
Well, it's hard to compare apples to apples, right? The talent gap between their defensive line, so on and so forth. I think the defensive line, the first four for Tech's pretty darn good, like I just said with the tackles. But the talent gap that you see in the units that go against each other, for example, that defensive line for Clemson is a lot for not necessarily Tech's offensive line to handle, but for your running backs to handle and your ability to move the ball. And I didn't think they were going to be able to coming into this game. I didn't think they were going to be able to run the ball effectively against it, and they weren't. And I think that's where you see the gap right now. I think you see it closing, though. I think you see it closing week by week in terms of the guys that Virginia Tech is playing offensively. But right now, where you intersected on that weekend, that defense was just well ahead depth-wise of where Tech's offense was, and I thought it showed.
Yeah, I mean, they got great athletes, and they have more of them, and they're bigger and faster and stronger. And you think about that interception, the one-handed jab out of the air.
Ridiculous.
I mean, there might be a couple guys on Tech's team that can do that, but I'd say Clemson's got several.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, in the trenches, you notice it, the gap in the trenches, just more depth and bigger guys. Their defense is so fast. And for the offense, for Josh Jackson only get sacked twice was really pretty amazing. Didn't have great success running the ball, which you probably knew going in you weren't. But, yeah, they are talented. Wouldn't be surprised at all if they didn't win it all again. And you'd love to get another shot at them just because you know you're going to get better as the season wears on as well.
And here's the thing. I don't think their offense played necessarily good in that game. I think the defense is almost a fully grown product right now. We saw the impact of Dorian O'Daniel, who missed most of the ACC championship game with that targeting. But it's to Mike's point, it's you've got guys that are really good yourself in those spots, but then you add an extra dimension with O'Daniel. And those defensive ends, the way that they track down plays, even some of the positive plays for Tech that were 8-9 yard gains, they would be finished with a defensive end running it down from the backside out on the perimeter. And you don't see that with a lot of programs, and you probably don't see that here right now.
Yeah, and I know they don't have Deshaun Watson, so I understand it's not the same team from last year, but they are equally and at times maybe more physically imposing than the one that we saw in the ACC championship last year.
I'll say this. I bet if you asked their coaches, they probably thought they played it pretty close to the vest in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they only got 61 yards, but they didn't take a lot of chances either, because I think they knew how good their defense was, and that the Hokies were going to have a hard time scoring against them unless they screwed up and made mistakes or turned the ball over. So I think they probably held it a little bit close and didn't take a lot of chances just because they have so much faith in that defense.
Yeah, and to Mike's point exactly, they did that on punts too. They weren't trying to come after the punt. They didn't set up a return. It didn't matter where it was going to be. They were going to let it land or fair catch it because, yeah, they recognized that Tech was not going to move the football against their defense. And if you didn't make mistakes, which they didn't in this game, then they weren't threatened. We've seen Tech play that way before because they have so much faith in their defense, and they were right.
Well, Isaiah Ford was down on the sideline. I had the opportunity to talk with him during the game, and he made a great observation, and I'm sure the coaching staff saw the same thing. This goes back to the stuff that we talked about at the beginning of the season and last week, issues that Tech has had that maybe haven't been exposed yet. Isaiah said the way they played Cam Phillips was necessarily flawless for them, because what they could do is they could take a linebacker and basically either put him on the side of the line and help on run protection or have him drop back and get into the window where Cam Phillips was. So that was the double coverage effectively of Cam Phillips. And Tech at this point, we've talked about it, needs to find that consistent threat at wide receiver outside of Cam Phillips, because last year you had Phillips, Ford, and Hodges, and you had to pay attention to all three. Right now, people can zone in and will zone in on Cam Phillips. Somebody else is going to have to threaten some defensive coordinators.
Well, not only that, you're right about that aspect, but not everybody can play that defense. And in fact, a lot of people can't, because your linebackers aren't going to be as fast, as Mike was talking about before, to get over to that quadrant, or they're not going to be as physical to come up and help in the run game like that. So that allowed them to do some high safety stuff and keep the football in front of them, which I think Tech will see more of. They want to see younger people execute to that point. And absolutely, it's the issue going into the season that we knew. I think Sean Savoy has played very well at times, and he has looked like a freshman in other times. Same thing with Henry Murphy. Somebody has to be more consistent. What I like about our coaching staff is in those moments that are teaching moments, somebody else's opportunity, and they just continue to cycle them in and see who's going to make a play. They have at times, again, but back to the original point of that, it was a great game plan. Give Brent Venables all the credit in the world. He's one of the best. He's right up there with Bud Foster right now in terms of who's having success in the college game. But again, I just don't know how many other – that's not a blueprint, I don't think, for how to shut down Tech going forward.
And part of the reason they can do that is because those front four guys are pretty daggone good.
Right. Yeah, sure. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
So,
that'll leave you a little bit of chance to do some other stuff and be creative. And Bud's done that in the past, too. Get those guys in the passing lanes and let them help out. And you know, we've seen defensive ends do that as well, get in the passing lanes. So, yeah, it was a good game plan. He didn't attack us much as I thought he probably would. But yeah, you got to find another receivers. And it's not that they don't have the talent, but golly, they're just not very consistent time in and time out. And nobody feels worse than Henry Murphy on that pass, but look how big a play that was in the game. And you couldn't have delivered a better pass. I mean, he's right on his fingertips. So things like that, somebody's got to step up. You know, maybe it's C.J. Carroll needs to just be more active, or I don't know. Kuma has been a no-show. I mean, basically, he's not done much at all. Dalton Keene hadn't really been involved in the passing game, but that puts a lot of pressure on Cam Phillips, and he had a decent game, you know, being covered like he was. But somebody else needs to get themselves open, play better, and show that they can catch the ball and have no fear across the middle.
Yeah, and again, I think the coaches this year will find ways to continue to disguise it and obviously rely on Cam Phillips heavily going forward and try to find enough. I think your concern starts to be almost looking forward, because the guys that Mike just listed off, you've got a lot of talent in the room, but eventually, particularly with the opportunities that you're getting, I mean, think back to when Isaiah Ford and Cam Phillips were freshmen. They had to step forward because there was a lack of depth at the time and a lack of playmakers. They did it. Sean Savoy has taken steps in that direction. Okay, we feel good about him, but what we're seeing behind the scenes, is Khalil Pimpleton going to be able to do that? Is Hezekiah Grimsley going to be able to do that? Is Patterson going to get healthy and be able to do that? And it's time to start proving that for these guys, not only for this year, but for how they're going to come in on the depth chart in the spring and going forward for this team. Because, again, you're going to take steps forward. And Justin Fuente has said, you know, I feel more convicted about the fact that we're going to do that. That's true. But just like any other year, you're going to have more losses next year, including Cam Phillips. And you're going to have a ton more talent coming into these classes. But they've got to be ready to roll.
Wasn't he dead on, though, when you think about what it was? The first thing he talked about was, I'm not worried so much about the quarterback as the supporting cast.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And here we are at the halfway point in the season, and there's still, like, no clear-cut second and third great receivers, not much depth there. It's been amazing. I mean, Josh has been pretty daggone good for a first-year player. And, the one interception wasn't his fault, and he threw in the coverage on the other. I mean, yeah, it's the supporting cast has not helped out as much as they need to.
And I know Josh hasn't played perfect, but I don't think the three of us, just like Coach Fuente said at the start of the season, are sitting here concerned about Josh Jackson.
No, I got asked this in a radio interview this morning. You know, Josh Jackson, blah, blah, blah. How do you feel about him going forward? I feel fine about Josh Jackson. Josh is not the issue right now for this team. But the issue is, though, that in spring, and the guys that you thought, it was Pimpleton and Keene. Basically, those were the guys who said, okay, these guys are going to contribute immediately. Dalton is, in various ways, just not as a pass-catching threat or a rushing option in this moment. So, you know, again, you continue to identify. They've done a nice job adjusting, and thank goodness for Sean Savoy, because the guy we're going to have on this podcast, CJ Carroll, we need more from him too at this point right now. And he's slipped behind Savoy right now in terms of that role. And you kind of need him to fight for to get it back because he was in a complimentary role last year, did a great job doing it. He's had a couple of plays this year, but you need more from him.
Well, I think part of that may be the fact that when you look at Josh, he's only, 6'1". CJ's not very tall, so then you couple that with the fact you're trying to look over these 6'5" line.
Where'd he go?
Right?
Where'd he at?
Like Josh is having a hard enough time seeing, and then he's trying to find CJ. Like, dude,
well,
stand up and be counted for. I am standing up, bro.
Well, that doesn't help Pimpleton either, or Savoy for that matter.
I know. That's why Kuma needs to show up.
Yep, I'm with you on that one.
All right, let me ask you a simple question, probably with a loaded response. How can Tech help Trayvon McMillan?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think that you need to recognize at this point, I always say this in every aspect of life, and I'm the type that I need to be encouraged to gain confidence. If you hammer on me, I'm going to wilt, mm-hmm. and that's why I don't play football and never was very good at it. Because, you know, when Mike tells me I had a good touchdown call, arguably the next one will be better. If he tells me it sucks, then the next one's going to suck too.
Pressure's on now, bro.
I guess the point is that, you know, Trayvon McMillan, for whatever reason, when the staff came in, he was, you know, anointed by Scott Leffler and, due to circumstance, became that kind of star bell cow back. And the staff came in and said, positions are all available. We need you to do X, Y, and Z. And we saw who those guys were last year. You know, Sam Rogers jumped to the forefront, and some of the other people, Marshawn Williams, I think they liked a lot until he got hurt last year. And we're not exactly seeing pass protection has something to do with it, what they're not getting from Trayvon McMillan in the background. But what it's leading to in the foreground is that every time he makes a mistake, you know, you're going to have fumbles in football. You're going to have missed blocks at times in football. But his leash right now is so short that when that happens, he comes out, and then his confidence just plummets. And it's not a situation where if they go back to him later in the game, he's going to reemerge in that game. So it's kind of got to be boom right out of the chute, and he's great that week, and that's great. But I think at some point you have to acknowledge the way in which you are handling him at this point and try to prop him up a little bit. You know, you're our guy. We're going to feed you the football. And they'd started to do that, by the way, against Old Dominion, to their credit, and then he got hurt. So, you know, it's not that they're not trying, I guess, to mentally get through to the kid. They're just not all the way there yet.
He's got to help himself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, I mean, they need to encourage him probably. And
Dave Giddings, the team chaplain, is there and helps him quite a bit on the sideline, for what it's worth.
Yeah, and Dave's great about that. He really is, and some of the other guys are as well. You know, he's got to have the mindset that, hey, first and foremost, I know I got to protect the football. I mean, we've seen that in the past. Last year, the same thing kind of happened. But if he wants to be a featured guy, he needs to show up and play and not turn the ball over and make the block that he needs to make. And he'll get another shot this week. I mean, it's a different week, a different page. Obviously, Boston College is struggling stopping the run, so he could come out this week and have 150 yards. You never know. But he's got to help himself, along with the coaches showing maybe they have a little more confidence or not a shorter leash.
Bottom line, you need him this week because Boston College is allowing a lot of rush yards, but it's still a pretty beefy defensive line. They're not as athletic as they've been the last couple of years, but you need your bigger backs to be a part of it this year. It was lost last year in the aerial show that came later from Gerard Evans, but they softened up BC a lot with the juice. Marshawn Williams had his biggest day in a couple of years, nearly 90 yards against him, and Gerard Evans bulldozed a little bit too. Those were your top two rushers, so it's not going to be a week in the middle drill for scat backs. And Trayvon, without Stephen Peoples at the moment, not sure if he's going to play or not this week, but if he doesn't, he's your biggest, bulkiest guy, and you're going to have to plow him into that line a few times.
Said all summer, man, he's the key to that offense, running the football. He's the best talent they got, most speed. He's the total package. but he's got to play, and he's a real key, and he's going to be a key moving ahead in these last seven ACC games.
And I'll say this not as a gigantic concern, but as something that crossed my mind. There is, at the moment, when you take Sam Rogers out of the equation from last year, when you take Jerod Evans, who is a physical running style quarterback for Virginia Tech, and when you take Stephen Peoples out of the lineup because of his injury, there is a small lack of some grinders and some physicality in the running game right now. And whether it's Trayvon McMillan amping up his own physicality, whether it's Deshaun McLeese amping up his own physicality, he can be physical. He just doesn't have the size for it necessarily. There is a gap of physicality when you run the football right now for Tech.
Yeah, and that's why I think by the end of the season, this illness was really poorly timed for Jalen Holston, because there was going to be opportunities the last couple of weeks for him to come in and be that physical back. When Trayvon had the hip issue against Old Dominion, I think it would have been Jalen if he had been available in that game. Clemson, as Fu said, you don't want to bring him back to that, probably 5 or 7 pounds down due to that illness too. But eventually, that's going to be your guy. Next year, I would imagine he's going to be your physical back. But right now, to Mike's point, it's Trayvon, and time to do it.
Got to play.
All right, last one on the concerns, and then I want to move forward toward Boston College. But Joey Sly, and I love the kid. He went 1 for 2, made a nice long field goal, and then missed another one. Do you continue with this game to think about how you use him? Because, look, going back a couple of weeks, if you just have him make the short ones that he missed, the one he misses against Clemson isn't a concern. But because we have the short ones that were missed in our back pocket, he misses another against Clemson and it feels worse. Do we change at all our thoughts after the Clemson game?
No, not yet. And it's not just Joey Sly, by the way. It's the entire field goal operation. I don't think the hold was that good off what appeared on film to be a pretty good snap from Colton Taylor there on the miss. And Joey still will tell you he's got to make that kick. It was a half a beat late, but, you know, the mechanics and all of that good stuff. No, I don't think the Clemson game really will have any bearing on that. He hasn't at this point, and we're not looking for this to happen. This is not a Josh Jackson situation where we're hoping for some adversity to see how he handles it. We're past that. But you're not going to examine making a change or something like that until there's a kick that's devastating to your chances to win, and we haven't necessarily seen that. That missed field goal against Clemson was not going to win the Hokies the football game, and we haven't been there. And if you get there, then yeah. But and we love the kid too, Andrew. I mean, I do. I personally did. Sure. I worked with him philanthropically all throughout the offseason. I love his family, and I think he's a very talented guy. I remember Pittsburgh, the ease in which he popped through 6 field goals in that game last year. I remember the 4 overtime game, how he just nonchalantly went out there and had no trouble with field goals that extended that game. So it's there, and really all that matters is what's in Joey's head right now. And I think he's probably in a better place than we are talking about it.
Yeah, not a better kid out there. I mean, does all the little things,
awesome.
Does
He's
the
awesome.
Work in the weight room, got a great family. Nobody wants to be better except more than he does. I mean, it's just a confidence issue is what it boils down to. But not only is it an issue of that, but you don't really have a backup. So that's part of the problem. Like if nobody's pushing you, sometimes you don't maybe concentrate as much as you need to or for whatever reason. So that's one issue. And not only was he 1 for 2, but you think he's going to fake a field goal on 4th and 12 if he has confidence in your kicker?
Yeah.
Wrong answer. Yeah. He would have kicked that. Yeah. So, you know, it's not only that. It's the other issues like that, trying to get a 4th and 12 against that defense. That makes it difficult. So, yeah, you definitely got to be concerned. And here you got this open date coming up after this game. It may be back to the drawing board if it's a struggle again this week, because you got to have it. I mean, we're at the halfway point of the season. We're talking about it. All those misses are adding up. And sooner or later, it's going to be a point where you don't have no confidence or you're going to lose a game.
And hypothetically, if this situation were to arise in the weeks to come, this is what it would look like. Joey Sly is going to be your kickoff guy, because to Mike's point, you don't have a backup that has a similar leg to Joey Sly. Anything over 40 yards, it's still going to be Joey. But Brian Johnson, who is his backup, again, doesn't have the leg like that. I think there may become a situation where if it's a mental thing with Joey and you're just worried about consistently getting through the operation, then shorter field goals, potentially, that's where he might take over. But again, that's hypothetical. It's down the road. But Joey Sly will kick off for this
and
team.
You would hate that for a senior.
That's
I
awful.
Mean, that would be awful. That would just devastate him and everybody else. But I said this somewhere. Maybe it was Friday and we were down in Roanoke. Players have come and gone, right? People are bigger, faster, stronger. The weight rooms are better. Nutrition is better.
Yep.
But since I played, I'm telling you, bro, Kickers are a different breed. they travel to the beat of a different drummer.
Yeah.
And I love Joey to death, and he is a great kid. But sometimes the confidence just gets a little bit waning, and you lose it a little bit, and it's hard to get back.
And like you said, John, he's got the skill set. He's got the leg. He's got an NFL power leg out there. You just hope it clicks to him in the final couple of weeks of this season so he finishes what has been a record-setting career in the fashion that you would want it to finish it for him. All right, the last thing I'll say, because this has been about 15 minutes worth of nitpicking. Well, I guess it's not nitpicking. It's serious issues.
We're sorting out issues.
That's right. We're sorting out issues, but I don't feel any less confident after this game about Virginia Tech's potential to roll through the Coastal Division, not with ease, but with success. I can't imagine you guys have any less confidence in Virginia Tech to be successful. I'm not saying win the championship. I'm not saying going to the championship, but winning plenty of games. This doesn't spell probably some sort of long losing streak just because of how good Clemson is. That was my, as I stepped away from the game on Saturday, feeling. Like, this is still a good Tech team.
You know, it's been interesting that this season has unfolded and we're almost to the halfway point and you really haven't had any surprises. It's kind of unfolded exactly the way that you expected. The secondary options in the offense or the complementary weapons in the offense have been the issue. You beat West Virginia. You felt like you were going to have a good chance to do that, and then you felt like you were going to have 3 weeks where you were a heavy favorite and you could grow, and this team did that. Then you knew you had Clemson coming in here and they were going to be a tremendous challenge, and they were all of that and then maybe some. So you're sitting here at 4-1, and yeah, nothing's changed about your thought process in terms of your confidence level going forward with this team. I think the Coastal is absolutely wide open. I think that this is going to be a team, particularly with their inexperience on offense, that at times is going to get themselves in battles on the road and struggle in some of those hostile environments to put up points. But it's also a team that has a very experienced and veteran defense that at the moment is playing particularly well, that's going to keep you in pretty much each of these games. So I don't think there's going to be a team that's going to run the table in the Coastal. I really don't. I don't see a team that's whole enough to just go through that gauntlet. I'm looking forward to it because, no, my confidence level of the fact that the Hokies have a great chance to win the Coastal, sure, it's still there.
Yeah, they got a great chance without question. I think this is such a key game this week because you're coming off a tough loss. Boston College is a desperate team. It's a night game, you know. I just think that reacting after what happened last week, the disappointment, knowing you got an open date coming up, you better be ready to play and play well and get this thing over with, because then you come back after the open date, you got two home games. That last stretch is going to be brutal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you go Miami, Georgia Tech on the road, mm-hmm. Pittsburgh at home, and then Virginia. You look how well Georgia Tech is playing and how well Miami's playing, and the game this weekend between Virginia and Duke will be huge. I mean, if Virginia gets that win, you're just sitting there thinking, those old Cavaliers are coming along. They figured it out, and they got it going right. So it ain't going to be easy to win the Coastal, especially playing those three out of the last four on the road. So I think this is such a key game this week to make sure that you get it right and go to that bye week with some confidence, knowing you got those two home games when you do come back, and get ready for that stretch run because it's going to be difficult.
You happen to cruise by my hotel room at some point this Saturday, Andrew, and you hear the tomahawk chop going. That won't be an accident because we're Florida State fans this weekend, no doubt about it.
All right, so let's get into the Boston College game. BC 2-3, coming off a win against Central Michigan this past week. What are the things that most concerns you about the team on the field for Boston College? Let's start with that, because you touched on the atmosphere, and we can go back into that. These are games up there in Chestnut Hill where sometimes you have to bring your own energy, and maybe that's the biggest point about this game, bringing your own energy in a stadium that will, you know, I don't know. I have no idea what kind of crowd's going to show up. But what do we know about this BC team on the field?
Well, right now you come in, and it's an example of stats can make you look any direction you want. And they look like they've got one of the top passing defenses in the country, and that's not necessarily the case. They do have a very stable and solid secondary on this team, but the reason that they haven't given up a ton of pass yards is because, to Mike's point earlier, they haven't been able to stop the run and nobody's had to go to the air. That's what concerns me a little bit, is that that's not Tech's MO to just power the football down the field. They run when they have to open some things up in the pass game and get things on the perimeter. So I'm a little bit concerned where you came out of the game against Clemson, not from a physical standpoint, but from a mental standpoint with your top two guys, if Stephen Peoples doesn't go, in terms of Trayvon McMillan and Deshaun McLeese. From a personnel standpoint, Boston College offense doesn't scare you the way that they did even in the last couple of years. They still got Harold Landry and a couple of other playmakers on the defensive line, but their linebacking core has been ravaged by injury and graduation departures, and that secondary doesn't have the hitters that it used to. Offensively, they're a tick better. They're a little bit more physical on the offensive line than they were, particularly 2 years ago when they lost all five starters, and we know that Scott Leffler's capable of scheming some things up, particularly against the defensive coordinator and Bud that he knows very well, but they just don't, flat out, they just don't scare you offensively right now. So my biggest concern is the level of play that we're going to get from Tech coming off of last week.
Yeah, you wonder, because last year was just a behind-the-woodshed whooping that they put on Boston College last year. So you know in the back of their mind they're thinking about that, obviously, number one. You know, the thing with Lefty not scoring against Bud's defense, you know that aggravates the crap out of him, right? And so you got Jim Reed, you got Paul Pasqualoni on the defensive line. They got some good coaches on that staff. The players are the issues. They just don't have the cupboard's not full like it used to be in some of the vintage BC days. So two pretty good running backs. And, you know, the offensive line and tight ends are not quite as big and good as they are in the past. Quarterback's not super mobile. I think they want him to run more, but they're trying to bring him along slowly. I think when you look at their defense, they're just last year they gave up. They were like one of the best defenses in the league and one in the country against the run, giving up like 3 yards a carry. Now they're giving up over six. So the defense is just giving up big play after big play in the running game. And so, yeah, like Lay says, people don't pass. So that's why their pass defense is pretty good. People aren't having to pass against them. Although that Dennis kid's got five interceptions. And they are aggressive. They'll play a lot of man-to-man and do that. So the opportunities are going to be there. But the Hokies have got to go up there and try to run the ball. Everybody else has. And so you've got to be able to run the ball against them. You don't want to rely strictly on pass. They got a great punt returner. The kid's really, really talented. So that's something you got to be concerned about as well. And I think their punter's okay as too. So I know they're excited about the game. It's probably going to be a bigger crowd in my mind since it's a night game, because the Hokies would love to play the game at noon, get out of there, because there probably wouldn't be anybody there. But it's going to be a nice day in the 70s, low 70s. So I think a night crowd is probably more apt to bring some people in. We'll just have to see what the atmosphere is like. But we know one thing. The place only holds 44, so right off the bat, you're going to have 20-some thousand less than you had the week before. They were all
40. It ain't going to be 44.
Yeah, so it probably won't be. And I'm still trying to figure out why it's a night game on the deuce.
I don't know.
Well, no, we're television ready, Mike. The leader
sometimes it's who you play, though, that makes it a better-looking game.
Well, I think this game profiles a lot more like it did 2 years ago when you went up there behind Coach Beamer for the first time, or the last time, excuse me, and that was the game right before he announced his retirement. You won 26-10, and it didn't look like you blew out Boston College like you did last year, but in actuality, kind of the way Clemson felt, where you didn't feel threatened on defense throughout that day. I'm not saying this is going to be a shutout, and I don't think it will be, but I think it's going to be a day where you're going to be pretty confident in your defense's ability to hold them down to scoring level that you can keep up with and grind it out on the ground and probably get out of there 24-10, something like that.
You know, it was interesting talking to one of their guys, actually this morning I did, and they were talking about Landry, and they were saying in some of the first games
they're limiting him. Yeah,
limiting his play. Like, he only had like 48 snaps out of 72.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
And by the time he plays, they're out of the game.
They want to keep him fresh in the fourth quarter. Like, well, the game might be over in the third quarter. So, yeah, I'm not sure what the deal is with that. So that could be some change that they try to tweak a little bit with their defensive coaches.
Look, to me, this sort of profiles, and again, like you said, not saying it's going to be a blowout, but it sort of profiles like one of those non-conference basketball games where you're going to say it's more about us and how we execute and how well we play versus what the other team's going to throw at us. Because the last time Virginia Tech went to Chestnut Hill and quote-unquote blew out Boston College, you have to go back to 1996. It was a 45-7 score. Otherwise, these games are 27-17, and they're not fun, and they're ugly, and they're grinding games, and maybe it'll be different this time. But when you go up there, look, something about Northeastern college athletics not always a ton of people hanging out up in Boston or when we go to Syracuse or whatever, dying to see a college football game. You've got to bring your own energy, and Tech will need to do that.
We need you to bring the energy, Andrew, and get up early and bring the energy. We're going to get 18 Wheelers over at Chestnut Hill, and then we're going to have all day to hang out. So, yeah, we need it from you and Johnny and everybody else. Let's go.
Yeah, 7 p.m. is my prime time.
We're up in your neck of the woods, brother. Come on. This is your country.
All right, so let's step aside. Let's get C.J. Carroll in here, and then we will do something in reference to my neck of the woods. When we return, C.J. Carroll, and then a little treat to finish off Hokie Pod.
Syrup?
That's Vermont, not Boston. We're back in a moment. Hokie fans, get the StubHub app now. Not only will you find seats you'll love whenever you want, you'll also find the best seat for your buck when you sort by best value. StubHub, your ticket out, the official ticket marketplace of the Hokies. First off, CJ, thanks so much for talking with us. We appreciate it. Let's go back. Clemson, what is the diagnosis for the team? How did you guys feel after that game?
We felt that we played well, but we didn't play well enough. We kind of beat ourselves. We looked at some plays, and there were some plays that really didn't have anything to do with them, more of us just kind of beating ourselves and not taking anything away from them. They're obviously a great team with size and speed, but there's some stuff that we could have helped ourselves. We didn't do that, but I mean, we're working on it this week to kind of bounce back, and looking forward to Boston College.
Yeah, just give us the mood. We're talking here on Wednesday. You've had practice on Sunday. There's been practice on Tuesday within the team meeting rooms, because moving past a game like Clemson, which is emotionally draining, and getting ready for a Boston College team and going on the road to a place that doesn't always have the biggest fan base, it can be tough sometimes. So what has been the bounce back these past couple of days from the team?
Coach Fuentes has been preaching, how are we going to respond? I mean, obviously coming off an emotional game, and going up to Boston College, it's the hype around the game obviously isn't as big as it was last week with College Game Day, prime time, number two in the country, defending national champs. But Coach Fuente has been preaching, how are we going to respond? We can either just go in the tank and find ourselves 0-2 in the conference, or we can respond and go play a physical Boston College team, and it's going to be a good test for us on the road, night game. I'm sure they'll have a crowd out there. I mean, I don't really know. The last time I played there wasn't a crowd, but hopefully they come out and support. I mean, it should be a fun physical game.
By the way, be honest, did you get caught up in the hype of Clemson? And when you're away from practice, when you're away from the building, just give yourself the chance to be like, wow, game day's here. The whole thing is going. Clemson's coming into town. Did you allow yourself a couple of moments to embrace that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you kind of have to. It's kind of a once and doesn't happen a lot. I mean, growing up, you watch these games and you're like, geez, like that would be fun to play. And for College Game Day to come and the whole crew and you're playing Saturday night, you kind of have to sit back and just say, wow, like this is pretty cool. The atmosphere was great, and the outcome wasn't what we wanted, but I mean, we learned from it.
By the way, take me inside the wide receivers meeting room. How did Holman Wiggins feel about things?
He's a perfectionist, so he expected a lot more out of us. I mean, we made some plays, and there were some plays that we didn't make that we should have made, but all in all, we felt that we left some plays out there on the field that could have been made and could have potentially, I don't know, maybe change the game. I mean, you know how it is. Some plays can really affect a game, but there was definitely some plays out there that we left on the field, but we looked at the film and kind of have to learn from it.
All right, so obviously one of the storylines for this season is developing depth at the receiver position, because last year there was Isaiah, there was Cam, there was Bucky, and now there's no Isaiah, there's no Bucky. And teams, it seems to me, have been able to, they haven't always done it, but Clemson did, key in on Cam Phillips a little bit more. Give fans a sense from a wide receiver's perspective exactly how coverages are different, how teams defend Tech differently throughout the first couple of weeks of this season based on what the Hokies have out there on the field.
I mean, obviously Cam is our guy. He's our go-to guy. First few weeks, he was dominating, and there wasn't really any coverage shifts or anything. Last week, Clemson kind of gave us a little bit where they would roll the safety over and kind of cheat him over to that side, so you could have the corner kind of playing underneath and then the safety kind of helping them over top. But, I mean, that just kind of allows, like, other players to make plays. I mean, we have to make those plays when they're presented, and I think we have some guys that can do that. I mean, you saw Henry Murphy making plays out there, obviously Sean Savoy, myself, and there's some other guys, too, that you haven't seen a lot of yet. But, I mean, we're definitely kind of – we have the depth. We just – they're young. We're young, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, there's no doubt. There's plenty of skill on that receiver core, for sure. For you personally, let's go back a couple of weeks. You had your first career touchdown catch against Old Dominion. Take me back to that moment. It seemed like certainly a fun one on the field, and I saw a lot of jokes back and forth when you guys came to the sideline.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, when I got the call, I was like, oh, this might be it. This might be finally it. I was talking to myself. I was like, please, please, please. I ran my route. It was kind of like a double move. The linebacker actually bit, and I rolled over the top, and I saw the ball coming. It was low. I was like, no, no, no. But I dove, and I caught it. I came up, and I didn't really know what to do. I was just happy. So I just jumped in the air, and I think it was Dalton or someone caught me, and I had a smile for the rest of the game, the rest of the night, and it was fun. I mean, to finally get my first touchdown after playing a whole year, like, it was cool.
Was that something that was in the back of your head? Because I know baseball players here, and if they go freshman, sophomore, junior year, and they don't have, say, a home run, it starts to be in the back of their mind, and teammates have no problem reminding them about it. Is it the same thing for you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was a monkey that I kind of got off my back. I mean, after I scored, people were like, you haven't scored yet? I was like, no, that was it. That was the first time I've scored. So it was good to get that monkey off my back.
All right, so I want to dispel the notion. Obviously, I'm sure you've heard more than your fair share of 5'8" references on this team. The whole deal, I want to get rid of the notion that you're just some 5'8" guy that straps on a helmet. What's the most athletic thing CJ Carroll can do?
Oh, man, the most athletic. I can dunk a basketball. I can do the backflip where you backflip and you can catch the ball. So, I mean, those are two things. I mean, if you looked at me, you wouldn't think I could dunk a basketball, but I can dunk a basketball if it's a little bit flat. I know. My hands aren't big enough, so it's got to be a little bit of air out of it. But, yeah, I can get up there and I can dunk it. So,
how long have you been able to dunk a basketball?
So I think it was my sophomore year of high school. I couldn't dunk, so I would jump off someone's back and dunk. I don't think it was until I got here and started getting in, like, the weight program and stuff, and my legs started getting stronger. And I played a lot of basketball when I redshirted, just kind of messing around. And eventually I started getting up, playing at the rim. And a couple times I would throw the ball up to myself, let it bounce up near the rim, and I would go up and dunk it. And so probably maybe freshman year, college, sophomore year, around then.
That's pretty darn good. What's the sport that you're best at if it's not football? Was there a sport in high school or growing up that rivaled your ability on the football field?
Oh, man. I played lacrosse up until high school. I didn't play in high school, but I was always a really good lacrosse player. And I was a decent basketball player, too, but I didn't play in high school because, I mean, basketball is, like, different. I mean, you got 7-footers out there, and I mean, I can shoot, but I wasn't the best shooter. But I would say basketball and lacrosse, I was pretty good at.
What positions did you play in those sports?
I played middie in lacrosse and point guard, obviously, in basketball. I mean, I'd just pass and be quick with the ball and pass. I was all right shooter, but I was more of a Steve Nash kind of pass the ball type of guy.
Lacrosse is pretty popular where you are, correct?
Yes, yeah, it's really popular. My younger sister actually is at Penn State playing girls lacrosse, so I kind of grew up around it, and a bunch of my friends from high school played, so it's kind of, yeah, I was around it a lot.
Introduce us to the Carroll family, because you're one of six, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have. Okay, so my younger brother, Shane, he's in eighth grade. He plays football. He's getting ready to go to high school. He thinks he's the best right now. I got another younger brother, Jason, who's a junior. He plays lacrosse. He doesn't play football. He's kind of more of a skinnier guy, just lanky, kind of plays lacrosse. And he's kind of looking to see where he wants to go right now for college. And then I talked about my younger sister, who's at Penn State. She's a freshman. She just got there. And I also have a younger brother who's also a freshman. They're twins. And he plays football at Ave Maria down in Florida. And then I have an older sister who graduated from Penn State, and she was a gymnast there. So we got a lot of athletes in the family going around. And then my parents, you know, they take credit for all the athletic ability and stuff. But, yeah, they're always supporting us.
I should say, you used to live up in Maryland. You guys now live down in Naples. All right. Is there mom or dad? You just said they both take credit. Mm-hmm. Is one of them genuinely the better athlete than the other?
Oh, man.
Putting you on the spot, CJ.
I hope my dad doesn't listen to this interview, but I think my mom is more athletic. She can throw a football better than any girl or woman I've ever seen. She can run fast. My dad will tell you how good he was, but I've never actually seen the tapes or anything. So, Dad, if you're listening to this, send me some tapes, and maybe we can sort this all out.
That would be fantastic and fun, and I'd love to get the whole thing on video. Maybe we can get you and your dad and some of the other siblings in a race. Speaking of which, you obviously played with Kendall Fuller in high school, and we've known that family for a long time here at Virginia Tech, and they've had family races, and they've had things that they've competed in growing up. You've got five siblings. All of you are fairly athletic. Was there some sport, was there some competition that brought all of you guys together out in the backyard or whatever it was growing up?
Oh, yeah, it was always football. We always played backyard football, girls too, and it'd usually end with someone not too happy, usually fights or crying or something, but it was always super competitive. And me and my sister, my older sister, she used to be faster than me. We would race all the time, and eventually I just got faster and faster, and we competed a lot. And it, growing up in that household is very competitive, and no one likes losing. It could be a video game, and someone's ending up crying or not happy. So that's how the Carroll household was.
What's the video game of choice?
It's either Madden or 2K, one of the two, between me and my brothers, and I usually win, I'm not gonna lie.
Okay.
But I don't know, they could be practicing as we speak right now, I don't know. So hopefully they are, because they need all the help they can get.
But, is it safe to say that you are the best athlete and the best video game player of the family? Are you confident enough to make those statements, or do you have a sibling that would rival you?
Oh, no, I'm definitely the best athlete in the family and definitely the best video game player. No questions asked. Nothing else needs to be said. That's it.
What was the message from mom and dad when things would get a little bit out of control? Who's the one that laughed at it? Who's the one that had to set it straight?
Honestly, usually they really wouldn't laugh. I mean, they would kind of try to play both sides of the cards, but usually, I don't know. I don't know if anyone ever laughed because they kind of got annoyed by it, but they would just kind of calm us down. And I don't really know. It ended at so many different times. I couldn't even tell you. It happened so differently every time.
I can personally tell you that growing up with five siblings is not something that I did. So I have no idea, like your parents, how I would react in those given situations. Take us back to high school, by the way. We mentioned the Fuller family. What was it like playing with him? I know you've had this question before, but it's fun to reminisce on some of our favorite families of Virginia Tech, whether it's the Carrolls or the Fullers, or we've got the Edmonds now. So what was it like playing with Kendall? How would you describe Kendall Fuller as a high schooler? We know he was good.
Yeah, he was really good. He wasn't only my teammate. He's one of my good friends, too. My junior year, he was a senior. After every game, we'd go hang out at my house, and we'd spend the weekend. Like, he lived in Baltimore, which was like 45 minutes away. And he liked to come out and hang out in Olney, which is where I lived, is where most of the people were. So a lot of times he would just stay the whole weekend, and we'd have family dinners on Sunday and stuff like that. But him as a football player, he was unbelievable. Like, crazy athletic, obviously. It was just fun to watch, and it was fun to go up against him in practice, because you don't beat them much, but when you beat them, it's you get a sense of accomplishment.
All right, so you said when you beat him, which means you did once or twice. Tell us those stories in practice or whenever it was.
Oh, yeah, I've gotten him a few times. He'll admit it, but if it wasn't a lot, I'm not going to lie. But you just got to be smart. Once you play against someone for so long, you kind of learn what they like to do. And as I played with him for years going into college, too, I mean, when I was on scout team my freshman year, we went up against each other too, and I beat him a few times then. So it doesn't happen a lot, so you gotta be happy when it does happen.
Give us your best game that you ever had in high school, or maybe your favorite game so far as a Virginia Tech Hokie.
I'll go my favorite game as a Hokie has got to be the Notre Dame game. That's when I wore 25. I think I had like 80-some yards receiving, had a big play in the third quarter to kind of spark the comeback. We were down 17, and it was just, that was kind of the so far, my defining college football moment so far. Hopefully there's something else that comes, but that's it so far. That's the game I'll look back and say, yeah, that's my favorite one.
All right, you're a redshirt junior, so we certainly hope there's more to come as well. CJ, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
As always, a big thank you to CJ Carroll. Appreciated the opportunity to talk with him. All right, players to watch for Virginia Tech and Boston College. Again, 5:30 pregame show with the Kubota kickoff show on the Virginia Tech IMG Sports Network. Me and Mike start things up, and it's a 7:20-something nonsensical kickoff up at Chestnut Hill. All right, players to watch for Virginia Tech. Who do you guys got?
Well, Trayvon McMillan would be the obvious one, so I'll go a little bit deeper. You need him to play well and run the football well and have some confidence in himself and his offensive line and everything else in the beginning of this football game. But if it's not there, then look for Jalen Holston, because he's back and he's healthy and he's not sick anymore. And you know, I think you're going to give him some opportunities in a physical football game, a four-hour middle drill, as Bud Foster likes to say. If it's not there early, doesn't mean you can stop trying to run the football. And I think for me, in a physical game, he's the next guy up.
Yeah, I mean, obviously somebody in the running game, knowing how Boston College's defense has been like a sieve against the running game is going to be the key. So one of those backs has got to step up. I think if you dive a little deeper, you got to hope one of those receivers, other than Cam Phillips, plays. Is it Grimsley? Is it Kuma? Somebody needs to step up and play a little bit better in that regard. So maybe we'll see who one of those guys are.
All right. Here we go. I don't pick players. We already know this.
All right, Herb Street.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, not because I'm too smart. It's because I'm not smart enough on the other side. All right. To finish off Hokie Pod, here we go. Because you've become, on the Hokie Pod, the king of the accents. You've been crushing that Australian accent throughout the course of the year so far for Scott Bradburn. Excuse me.
Oscar.
Yeah,
right, Andrew.
Wow, I like how you stumbled there to set that up. True dedication to the bit.
Yeah, true dedication.
On purpose.
Let's see what you got for the New England accent, for the Boston accent. Let's see how well this can be executed. I've loved the Australian one so far.
You should be a pro at this.
I will take a swing at it.
Okay.
I don't know how well I'll do because I've not been there in quite some time. But I've got a line right here. It's full of vowels that should lend itself to an effective Boston accent. So let's see what you got. I got it written down right here. Take a swing at it.
So I'm swinging first?
You're swinging first. Give us your best swing at the green monster up there, and let's see what happens.
Boston College. Boston College got the best clam chowder. Chowder in the conference. Wicked, wicked good. Wicked good, friends. Go Sox. That's pretty bad.
That was bad.
I'm not from up that neck of the woods.
Phenomenal podcasting is what that was.
Amen.
Ladies, would you like to take a swing?
No, I don't think.
Come
I
on.
Can
you can't throw stones in a glass house.
I'm not throwing stones. That was phenomenal.
See if I
give
can
give you
push
a shot, this. Andrew. Come on.
I'll give it my best shot here. We'll see what happens. I've got some accents that I can stick the landing
it's
on.
Boston.
Be a here.
Yeah, it's all
that.
Be a here.
Okay, let's see. I got to get in character. I got to pretend that I'm like Vinny from Southie.
I wish you'd stop getting in character. I'm glad this isn't a video medium.
How much time do we have here?
It's a podcast, baby. All right.
Boston College got the best clam shot in the conference. Wicked good. Noma! You got to throw in a Noma in there.
Yeah. Noma.
I feel like you sandbagged us.
Been practicing all night.
Yeah. It's been the most important thing of the week.
Don't worry, Mike. We got 4 hours of air time to work on Saturday night.
Kickoff from Boston College a little bit after 7:20. We hit the air on the Virginia Tech IMG Sports Network at 5:30. Join us, won't you? Thanks so much for listening to Hokie Pod. We'll talk to you later.